Did you just move the mic with your head?
You're cute. I think we're just going to start the episode like that. I've been recording for a little bit, so.
Why did you have...
Oh, my God.
I thought it was the cutest thing. Hi there, this is Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're a couple takes on MS. I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And welcome to this, the fourth episode of A Couple Takes on MS. And today, if you followed us from the last episode, we said that we were going to talk this time about tips for staying cool in the heat. Because MS, heat sensitivity, really big challenge. I need some help here, love.
You're contemplating the heat. I'm thinking about heat, but it's difficult because we are in Michigan and it dropped, what, like 30 degrees today?
Yesterday. You're in a turtleneck and I'm in a zip sweatshirt with a collar on the back.
Temperature fluctuations.
And with us, as always, is our socially distant masked producer Ryan. And Ryan, I see you're sporting layers today.
Yeah, I have a leather jacket and a hoodie and then just a t-shirt underneath. But yeah, I came prepared.
Because it is cold out.
Yeah, it's pretty cold. Yeah, I was planning to sit on your back porch and do that paperwork stuff. And then you're like, yeah, it's warmer in here.
Yeah, it's cold outside. And I think that's where, when we talk about like adapting to the heat because of the MS, and we'll have those tips. But I think for me personally, I do worse in the cold. And I don't know about you, Jennifer. I mean, well, I do know about you because I live with you and I'm married to you and all. But I mean, if you had a choice, which would you rather have, the heat or the cold? Now, I'm not talking personal sense, but I'm saying from an MS standpoint, which are you better in?
I'm right down the middle, which is just a terrible answer.
How diplomatic.
thank you. If it's too warm, I get very weak, and it's very difficult to help me with any sort of transfers. But if I'm too cold, then I'm very stiff, and I'm very like Frankenstein. And so I'm uncomfortable, and that's why I just like a perfect day and living in Michigan, that's becoming harder and harder to find.
I don't think those exist.
No.
Yesterday was pretty good, though, start to finish.
Yeah, yesterday was nice. How about you?
I think MS-wise, I think I do better in the heat than I do in the cold. I can't function. My hands don't work when it's cold. So yeah, given the choice, I'd rather have it be warm.
And for a non-MS perspective, Ryan, how about you? Would you rather be hot or cold?
Well, I moved to Texas, so I'd rather be warm.
Now, warm or like hot?
Super hot. I like the dry heat.
Yeah, it's super hot does sap everything out of you. When I first moved down there, I live near Houston, and coming outside, you know, it's 98 degrees with like 98% humidity because it was 5 minutes from the Gulf of Mexico. And I was like, oh, it felt like a wet blanket hit me in the face as I walked out my door. And Michigan's fairly humid, but it's not with the heat. It's a different thing altogether. Living around there, 89, 90 felt like 104 in Austin. comfortably level just because Austin's just a bit drier. There's a river which they call a lake for some reason, but it is the Colorado River. My grandma figured that one out. Actually, I was talking to her the other day about it. It's like, it's probably because all the rich people wanted lakefront property, not riverfront property.
Oh yes.
And I'm like, you are so much smarter than me, grandma.
Well, speaking about humidity, I remember the first time after Dan and I started dating, or we went to Iowa, and that was a smack in the face. That state is so humid. at least where we were going. And I have, back in the day, I used to torture my hair and keep it straight. And then you go into a humid state like Iowa and whoosh, there goes your, you've got like the nasty, wavy, poofy hair. No products going to fix that.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it is a lot more humid back there, but probably not like Houston. I don't know. But it is bad. I think it's just like it is. It's not just the heat, it's the humidity. I'll use that.
Yeah.
But
it makes a difference, because I also lived in Odessa, which is far west Texas. Which is dry, brown, flat nothingness. And it's 104 out there is fine. Like, you feel okay, but then you're like, oh, I'm in Odessa. Dang it. that's the bummer. Sorry, Odessa. Yay. Nice paper, but yeah, not a great town.
I just think that any excuse we can make, and the older I get, the more often I find like, oh, it's too hot out, or oh, it's too cold out, you know, and I would much rather blame it on the weather than blame it on the MS. So like what that. If I wake up and I don't feel like doing something, I'm going to blame it on the weather, not on the stupid chronic illness that we live with.
And I think that's where it became challenging today, because when you're talking about tips for staying cool in the heat, you don't feel really motivated about that when you had to turn the furnace up when you got out of bed in the morning, because it was like 65 in the house and I'm only supposed to get up to like, you know, 40 or, you know, 50. I think it was a high of 58 today as a high. And so.
Yeah, just in it, your laundry, your week's worth of laundry, you go from short sleeve shirts to turtleneck sweaters. You're all over the board, and it's difficult. If somebody had to come here and stay for a week, they would have to have two suitcases.
Yeah.
And that's important with the temperature, as you were talking about, for people newly diagnosed with the disease. Fluctuations in temperature and humidity can make a huge difference with how you handle your disease.
Well, and two, then, with the fluctuation in temperatures, especially going from really hot to really cold, and I always joke, it's like, this is why people get sick, and because you don't know how to dress. And I think then the sickness, and that amplifies everything with your MS, or at least for me, it does it for you, because once I get sick, it intensifies every single symptom I have with the disease.
And being your wife, I know that, because if you get a cold, you being my caregiver, when you don't feel well, the amount of care you are not able to provide, or, you know, I feel guilty because you're sick, legitimately sick, and you just feel pretty rotten. Like, I'm sorry, but you got to get up and help me because I need to use a restroom, or I need to eat dinner, you know, help me. And so that's a hard part about having a caregiver who's also living with multiple sclerosis. But it's like that with any care, with any husband, wife, or significant other relationship.
Well, I think that's the question, because, you know, Ryan, we're sitting here talking, you know, the issues with multiple sclerosis and living with, and it just gets me thinking, and I know we've talked about this before, it's just like sometimes it's easy for me, so I say people with multiple sclerosis, but I mean, I guess implying myself, you, and things that I've heard from other people, but a lot of this stuff, it's like you think, oh, this is horrible because, like you say, Jennifer, you'd rather blame the weather than the multiple sclerosis. And it's just like a lot of the stuff that we face is not that different from what other people are facing. On some, you know, levels, I mean, it's a lot more intense, a lot different levels of things. But when you're talking about caregivers getting sick, it really doesn't matter on the surface. A caregiver, whether or not they have MS, is going to get sick, and it's going to throw things off for caring for a loved one with MS. So it's just like the fact that I have MS, yeah, it knocks me out and I'm out of commission, whereas like somebody who doesn't have MS and is a caregiver potentially can recover or cover up the sickness a little easier than me. But it's like, I don't own the market on that as a caregiver, you know?
That's true. And it's really easy. I know when I was first diagnosed, it was just easy to blame everything on MS. You know, if you're having a tough day, you would blame it on your disease. And the longer I've lived with it, the more I try and blame the weather or blame the fact that we had too much beer to drink or I ate really crappy food the week before and no wonder I'm tired or Dan, you never go to sleep early enough. So no wonder we're struggling to keep going in the day. I don't like to blame my disease. I don't like to give it, as you would say, more credit than it deserves.
And I think it's the living with it. And the more you live, the more knowledge you have. And you know what things you can blame the disease on.
And it seems like you guys would forgive each other a little more, especially you of everyone. You understand what you're going through. Somebody that's, you know, a regular husband and wife, and then somebody falls ill, and you have to become a caregiver. It's like, oh man, it must be terrible that you're sick, but I'm not, so I got, you know, whatever, I got you. Mm-hmm. But like, especially with you two, like you guys, like you understand on a deeper level. And so you like, it seems like that would just like push you tighter into a little ball. It's like, yeah, here we are. Let's, you know, fill all these little cracks and just like be everything for everything.
And I think that's been the secret for us is that we don't have to explain, you know, in our support group, it's, you feel for couples where one person has CMS and the other doesn't because they don't have that built-in understanding that you and I have. Whereas if I say, oh, my hands are really numb today or it's hard for me to move my leg because it's really heavy, you get what I'm saying. And you never challenge or question that. It's just...
And I think that's just it. Maybe there's some things that you're dealing with your MS. I don't necessarily experience the same thing, but at the same time, I can relate to it. So I don't, you don't ask a lot of questions.
It's a given that we just get it. So, boy, that was a deep moment.
I feel good.
That's good. But back to the cold weather or to the warm weather, which someday we will have. And if we're going to talk about warm weather, I remember one time Dan and I went to see the band Train in concert. And I was doing good, loved the band. And I'm sitting there and I'm super excited for the concert and they just kept getting warmer and warmer. And I just kept getting quieter and quieter and quieter and shrinking in my wheelchair and shrinking. And Dan's like, what's going on? You know? What's going on? And so I'm like, I think I'm a little overheated. So he got me like a ice.
It was like a slushy something.
And that cooled me off. And within a half an hour, I was back to the Jennifer of not affected by a crap ton of heat. And that's for a newly diagnosed person. Those moments where just adjusting a heat, like, cooling yourself off. That's why cooling vests are so important, just to get that. And Ryan, what were you saying? Cooling towels?
I think they're called ice towels. It's like basically like the tighter nylon sort of head wrap that people wear sometimes, or like a beanie sort of thing, but it's made out of a synthetic material. And you basically just leave it in like a bucket of ice or in the freezer overnight. And then you put it on, it stays cold for like hours because of there's like little veins in it or something that are liquid and there's ice in there or something.
Yeah, and that is something with my multiple sclerosis, and I don't feel uncomfortable disclosing this, but of course I have bladder issues, and one of the ways that I treated said bladder issue was using oxybutynin, which is a good product, but you don't sweat when you take that. And so you get, well, for me, I can't say every patient, but I didn't sweat much.
Oh, dang.
And so I would get really, really hot.
Yeah.
And I think that was around the time that we went to that concert.
Oh, and it was ridiculously hot. I mean, I think it was like in the 90s. And Ryan, you could relate. It was down at DTE, and so outdoor concert, and it was sweltering. But they obviously the headliner, so you had and they had good warm up acts and opening acts. But it's just like you had to sit out in that heat. Mm-hmm. And then once Jennifer had the icy lemonade thing, and the sun went down, and then it was perfect. But I think those are things. Because, I knew that once you start getting hot, because with the medicine you were taking, I mean, it's like almost like you're baking inside your skin because you're not sweating.
And so just a small little modification, getting something cool to drink or using a ice towel or a cooling vest, that can make a big difference. And so we were just talking about that as warm weather approaches. How important it is to stay warm. And conversely, when it's cold out, we are big proponents of an electric blanket. As long as you can feel your skin and you know not to cook yourself, but just, make yourself comfortable. Because that perfect sweet spot where you're comfortable, you're not too warm, you're not too cold, takes a while to figure out. But when you do,
it's perfect. Well, and I think that's where, as we're talking about then ways to stay cooler in the summer, I mean, one of the big things is always schedule your events, outdoor events, in the mornings.
That's a good point.
In the mornings, like before 10 o'clock. But then in the evenings.
After 10 o'clock or after like 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, well, and the nice thing about doing things in the morning, like going for a walk, going for take an early picnic. But it's like you don't have if you go out at night, even at 7 o'clock or as the sun goes down, the concrete, everything has been baking in the sun all day. So that's just like generating a lot of heat, whereas like you do stuff in the morning. Things have cooled off or still cool from the night. So it's like scheduling the things or like going to a baseball game. We go to afternoon games. We always wait till night games.
Never mind the fact that they always have fireworks in the evening. So we love fireworks. And so you get a good game when it's not incredibly warm. And then you get like explosions of color and beauty.
Yeah.
So that's a good tip just to you conserve your energy by doing stuff first thing in the morning, or you use your energy when it's at its most prevalent or your biggest amount of energy, you do that in the morning. And then, in the evening when you maybe had a chance to take a nap in the day, you can do stuff at night. So,
and the other thing too is if you are out in the middle of the afternoon, I mean, a lot of these are just commonsensical. If I may, can I say commonsensical? Is that?
No, that's a swear word and you're not allowed to say it.
I take it back.
I think you're all good.
If you're out, find the shade. Stay and don't be a hero and say, I'll wait until I'm really hot, then I'll find the shade. It's like, no, pace yourself. And I think that's the thing. When you're living with MS, a lot of stuff, it's all trial by fire. You gotta I don't want to equate it like drinking in college, but you need to learn your limits, know your limits.
Or you can listen to people who have lived with the disease for 20 plus years and say, don't get overheated, like get in the shade, have your water, have a cooling vest, use these tips. Not like that we're know-it-alls or anything, but we have learned. Maybe we'll save you the headache of going to a concert where you like miss a big chunk of it because you're overheated.
I think it's just like...
I thought I was going to say because you got kicked in the head. That's what happened to me at a concert once.
Oh, do tell.
Oh, that was a good one. So it was I don't remember what year it was. I think it was 2004. So it was the Summer Sanitarium. It was Metallica doing a bunch of stadium tours with Linkin Park and the Deftones and... somebody, I want to say Limp Bizkit or somebody else weird like that. Floor tickets, so it's you're down in the mass of crazy people, and there was a bunch of us and one of my friend's girlfriends, and it rained so hard before we got in to I think it was Ford Field, but it was a closed dome wherever it was in Detroit, so it was either Silver Dome or Ford Field, I don't remember exactly, but because I will explain why in a second. And so like we all just got soaked and then got pushed inside a closed dome with each other, and everyone was soaking wet, and it was so hot. And so it just became this humid, putrid place to be. Oh. And it was so gross. But then we were down in front and like getting closer and closer, like as like bands came on and off stage, like we were trying to make our way to the front. And me and my best friend Brad were like, we got to get on the bar at least once in our life for a Metallica show. Let's make this happen. And the girl we were trying to protect, like we were all standing in a circle around her because she didn't want anyone in the crowd to touch her except for us. So we were down in the mosh pit and everybody's jumping around us. And so we're trying to like huddle up and protect her while watching the show that we paid to see. And it was during Limp Bizkit. People were crowd surfing and we're trying to like lift people over us. And of course, like she's in the middle, not lifting anybody. And so there's a dead spot. And the guy that we're lifting over, his knee just comes straight into the back of my head. And I couldn't remember anything that happened after that for about 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And then my friend Brad and I were like, okay, they're going to go sit down. So they all went up into the stands and Brad and I were just like pushed our way to the front and we got on the bar and we're watching. And Linkin Park was really good and had a lot of fun. And then a band started playing. I was there for it. But I don't know exactly what was going on because it took me 3 songs to realize that one of my writing heroes, James Hetfield, was standing 5 feet from me, staring at me. And like my brain just went, hey, that's James. And like my friend was next to me. Yeah, my brain just disconnected. I had no idea what was going on. I looked, turned and looked at Brad and I'm like, I think I need to go sit down. He was trying to get me water in between sets because he could see I wasn't processing what was going on because I guess he was asking me questions. And he told me after the fact he had to pay one of the stage dudes $20 to go get me a bottle of water because he thought I was like dehydrated or something. And it wasn't. It was because I had a concussion.
Oh, my God. But yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It was terrible, but like it's a fun story. But it's like, hey, maybe I had brain damage.
Oh wow.
That makes me want to ask. I kind of say that's my worst concert, but it was also like a fun story, so I'm always it was bad but it was still okay because I'm not dead.
Yeah, and that's always anything that ends with I'm not dead. That's good.
But I was gonna ask, like, what is the best concert you've ever been to, or worst, I guess, if you want to do a worst concert story?
Well, anything Springsteen's the best concert. I mean, that's I always tell Jennifer the concert, it was September 9th, 1999. And interesting you should say this, Ryan, because it was, and Jennifer's going to punch me for this, 5 years ago tonight was the last time I saw Springsteen live down at the Palace. And the last time I saw a concert at the Palace before they tore it down.
Moment of silence.
Yeah, my first concert was at the Palace. I saw Guns N' Roses in the 5th grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Blind Melon opened for him. I don't remember. They had that B-girl.
Oh, yeah.
Shannon Hoon. He died.
Oh,
yeah,
moment of silence for Shannon Hoon.
Oh, he was a good. He had a good voice.
He had an incredible voice.
It was him or Axl told the story. It's like they were in the same class. And yeah, Axl said that he caught the teacher staring up Shannon Hoon's sister's skirt or something like that. He like told it was a good show though. I don't know. I've sort of fallen out of favor with Guns N' Roses. I'm like, they're okay, but listening to them, like all their albums are kind of a type and they're sort of the same. And it's good though, but they did a thing in the concert that blew my mind is partway, like 3/4 through the show, the lights went down and then they brought a couch out on stage and they did like an acoustic set in the middle of like the rock show. And I was just like, what? Wow. And like, wow. I love acoustic versions of normal like metal songs. And it was so good. Oh, so much fun.
Wow.
Anyway, sorry I interrupted.
Oh, no, that's it. But it was, but I do think, yeah, 5 years ago tonight. And the cool thing about that, I mean, 3.5 hours that he played, 3.5 hours. And it was so cool. And obviously you're from Michigan. You're from Michigan. I mean, just as far as love or hate on Bob Seger, I think it's just like iconic that is Bob Seger. And just that you know, towards the end of the show, and Steve Van Zandt, you know, guitarist for Springsteen, he's pointing down into the crowd, and like maybe 10 seconds later, Seeker comes up onto the stage. Okay. I mean, and he obviously didn't perform. He was like towards the end of a 2.5 or 3.5 hour concert, and they gave him a tambourine to play, and he was up there singing and stuff. But I mean, That's awesome. I mean, totally epic. And it was like, you know, and obviously with Jennifer, I mean, it was just, I mean,
that was iconic. That was a good show.
Yes. So that's, yeah, anything Springsteen, everyone, yeah. Each one has its own story to it. But that was epic. Jennifer, and I'm going to be hurt if you don't say Springsteen.
Okay. Well, how about I tell you about the worst concert I ever saw?
Yes, I know of this.
Okay. I went to see, and the band is amazing, so don't be like hating on Dan and Jennifer Dickman, a couple takes on MS. But I went to see the Beastie Boys at, saw it at Kobo, and it was
nice,
but it wasn't, we had like the worst seats ever, and it was right after the Oklahoma City bombing. Ooh. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm super paranoid. And we're up in the way up at the top, and I hadn't been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I was in college, and I'm sitting, and I can't hear anything. And George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, they were the opening act, and I couldn't understand anything. And then the Beastie Boys came out, and I kept like saying, Is this a song I know? I didn't know anything because I couldn't hear anything. The acoustics were horrible. And then I started thinking, oh my God, what if a bomb goes off?
Oh, geez.
What if a bomb goes off? And so wrecked the whole concert for me. And it was just, that was the worst concert that I've ever seen. So that was the worst. And then any concert I see with you is wonderful.
Well, thank you. Well, but and then I just, and I'll keep the Springsteen train going, because when you saw the Beastie Boys at Kobo, but you also then we saw Springsteen play Kobo. It was a Vote for Change tour, and it was like Springsteen, John Fogerty, and REM played.
Then when you say that, did I see the Beastie Boys at Joe Louis Arena?
You kept saying it was Kobo beforehand.
Okay, well then.
Either or, but it's...
I say, those are like right next to each other, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, same thing.
But we did see Vote for Change, and that was pretty amazing.
That was good, but you met somebody at Vote for Change.
I didn't meet, but...
See, Jen, she'll say it was like between sets. I think it was between REM and Springsteen. And honest to God, no kidding, Ryan, we're standing there, you know, like in the sets, up from the floor, walking past my Jennifer, but Jennifer Granholm walks by. Yeah. See, walks by Jennifer and says, like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, oh my
God. She touched me.
So it
should have been like, don't touch me.
But this was pre-COVID times. Yeah. And like, I bring this up about the Beastie Boys concert, and I'm scarred for life because of the Oklahoma City bombing. And now, again, which we've talked about before, I'm scarred a little bit by COVID, and like, if somebody touched me, don't touch me.
Hey, I don't care if you're the governor of Michigan. Get your hands off, woman.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
And take your Canadian trash with you. Didn't she like import a bunch of trash to Michigan from Canada or something when she was governor?
Probably.
She made some deal that we took a tonnage of their whatever.
Yeah, now what is she? She's Secretary of Commerce or something.
She's something in Biden's, in Biden's
cabinet. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Or energy. I don't know.
I don't.
I mean, I do. Seriously, I do pay attention. But it was like on the spot and stuff. But
we're going to drop in the thing before this where we've been drinking.
No.
I don't. Always be honest.
But we haven't. I mean, we had dinner.
No, that's true. But we have been drinking as well.
We have.
We're definitely looser than we've been.
Yeah, and just a little more laid back.
Yeah. You got your foot out. I mean, come on.
Yay, that's good. We are going to, and that's something, a topic for another show someday. We are going to spruce up our kitchen.
Yeah.
Our kitchen is circa, you know, when we moved in, so 2005.
But I think this is all the original
like 80s.
Cupboards, yeah.
Yeah, it's an 80s looking setup.
I mean, here's the thing, Ryan. It's like the 80s are, what, like 40 years ago. And it's just like in the 80s, say even 89, a kitchen that was 40 years old was like 40, done oh, in yeah. 49. Jeez, yeah. That's how old thing yeah, you
it's,
get.
It's so like the, that, whatever you call that, the perspective, I guess, yeah. on yeah. that time past. It's like, well, it's only 20, 30. Holy crap.
But I think the big thing for me personally is it's going to be your kitchen too and my kitchen. Well, I drive a wheelchair and I have caregivers that drive my wheelchair. You being one of them.
Yeah.
And then there's just, it's bound to have accidents.
Yeah.
And I just think I'm a little afraid, like, if I have something this nice, will I be able to take care of it? I mean, just look around our house. There are little love taps everywhere. I want to say that I'll be a better driver, but, you know.
Well, you got your new snazzy chair.
I know, it's pretty, isn't it? But just, I'm...
Should then get some spinners for the rims.
Then I'm like, then, you know, you're somewhat concerned. Like, if we make it nice, will I be able to keep it nice? And then, you know, that.
No. I hate that style of thinking. Get yes. something nice so you can have something nice. Like, use it till it runs into the ground. Like, what are you trying to do? Resell it? Like, no, use your fridge. Use your stuff.
Yeah, I guess.
If you bang into it, who cares? It's yours.
Well, it gives the lived-in look.
Yeah. Patina.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to think of it. And that's a good point. My mom never wanted to buy anything that was so nice that if it broke, yeah. she would be super upset. She's like, I have kids. Kids make messes. They break things. And God knows Steve and I broke stuff. But I'm just... You know, like, we're going to make it super nice, and
yeah,
well, I'm going to be afraid all the time that I'm just mad.
No, make it livable and useful for nice for you. Okay. Make it what you need it to be. Don't try to, people do that with cars where they like buy a car and they're like, I'm going to treat it real nice and then I can resell it. I live in my cars. My car is a broken piece of crap because I've beat that thing to hell, but I treat it well, in the engine anyway. So it still works and it still gets me where I need it to go. But yeah, anybody else looking at the thing, it's going to be like, burf, no, thank you. And I'm like, this thing took me back and forth from Texas. 4 weekends in a row, I did 25-hour drives on the weekends. And I never doubt that car to get me somewhere, ever.
And I suppose going back to perspective, that's a good perspective to have. And I know you, Dan, you're going to say, if you get into an accident or you damage something, it's okay.
Yeah, hey, this is something we had actually had recorded this before we started recording the show that we just really wanted to share with you because we thought it was kind of fun. So Ryan's going to bring it back up for you just so you can bring... We could bring you into our conversations.
Yeah, full disclosure, we'd been drinking a little bit and just, you know, a couple beers over pizza. So it's not like we're sloppy or anything, but it was just a nice, relaxed conversation among friends. So it's audibly entertaining.
Hope you enjoy it. Funny part will be is if it falls and knocks over beverages.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you don't want red beer all over your white carpet?
Or get new carpet.
Or get new carpet.
All right, let's f*** this shit
up. Oh, if we were, like, in college, we would have one last party and just trash them. Knock the cupboards down ourselves. Yes. Who needs a demolition crew? Just get a bunch of drunk college kids.
When there was that flooding in Midland, mm-hmm. I was up here for just the tail end of that, and I was doing cleanup for a company, and... That was a fun job, knocking walls out of places.
Oh, I imagine.
Dealing with mold and, you know, 3 high-foot water that's mostly mud wasn't great, but yeah. Technically, that's not the state's fault. Anyway, they were privately owned dams. They shouldn't have been. That's not a thing that should exist, but we live in America, so... You don't like it, leave it.
God bless America.
Yeah, I don't want like...
Did you just move the mic with your head? You're cute.
I think we're just going to start the episode like that. I've been recording for a little bit, so...
Why did you
laugh? Oh, my God.
I thought it was the cutest thing.
Holy crap.
It was cute.
So good.
Why did you have to see that?
I was just looking over. I'm just thinking.
Jennifer is a shade of red. It's very, very deep. It's almost cute. As red as this beer.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Sorry.
Why are you embarrassed? That's cute.
Now I have
acid eyes. Now we have to stop recording because I have to go wipe your eyes.
They'll be okay.
No, they won't. You're going to be like half hour into this and you're still going to be squinting.
That'll be okay.
That was the cutest thing.
That went from like hilarious to informative.
Oh, boy.
Well.
Welcome to A Couple Takes on MS.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, it's usually at night.
Mm-hmm.
Just.
Well, tend to her and then explain.
It's okay. I'm opening them.
You need but tissue or something? They're right behind you. I can grab them.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
Here, I got you.
You're buried, Dan.
Hold on. I know, but I'm
tangled.
Okay.
You guys ever watch the Johnny Cash biopic? Joaquin Phoenix?
No.
Do you
was
like
that?
Johnny Cash?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I really
it's
like
Johnny
Cash.
It's an amazing movie.
And
I Walk the Line?
Yeah.
So that's what we need to do this weekend?
Absolutely. Why is that? But Reese Witherspoon plays June Carter.
No, thank you.
I'm caregiving.
Oh, man. Wow, that's good. But can I have the Kleenex? Because that's like my safety blanket. Yeah, that's a movie night. Like, we can go back.
That is absolutely a fan. Like, I heard like his Hurt cover, obviously, but then I haven't really ever listened to Johnny Cash. Like, I knew, you know, Ring of Fire or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But watching that movie was really good. I'm not, you know, however much is real or not, but there's the thing that I was doing was I got tangled. Reese Witherspoon does that with him backstage. They run into each other and her dress gets caught in his guitar and they're calling her on stage and she's playing it up for comedy because that's what she did. She was kind of a comedian more than a singer. And she just leaned right into it because the guy was calling her and she was like, "Hang on, Bill, hang on." And the guy's like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "Well, I got tangled." And then she's like, "In what, June?" He goes, "Johnny Cash's guitar strap." It's like, it's a pretty strapping strap. Oh, so funny.
We should. Yeah. And
Jennifer still looks pained.
Well, it's just like a little bit acid. Not really, but.
Yeah, we call it like acid eyes. And
I'll be okay.
I think it was the PBS, the Ken Burns country music.
Oh, yes.
I mean, if you ever get a chance.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
not a fan of country, but I love a good documentary. So
it does. I mean, it's just like it goes way back like to the roots of country. I mean, with Johnny Cash and Hank Williams and just all of that. I think there were like four, you know, in Ken Burns storytelling
like
prowess.
Decades.
Like, yeah. I mean, but then it finds like four artists to kind of chronological order.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like just to sort of, you know, just
chronologize,
the way
is that a word?
Chronologically. Yeah.
We've been drinking.
It's just like, where's my thesaurus? I think that's, you know, it's just like, so, well, you know, it's like as a journalist, as a reporter, it's like, I know what word, you know, where you know that the word great is exactly what you want to say, but it's like, what's another word for great that would work for this situation, for this sentence that I'm writing?
Right.
You know, because you don't want to take it out of context to where it doesn't define great anymore, but or defines, it's a way to redefine great, but it has to make sense for where it's being used.
So, yeah.
That's vocabulary 101 with Dan Digman. So
nice.
Very nice.
You okay there, dude?
I mean, seriously, I
feel bad.
No.
Yeah, we can just slide the table over if you need to.
Well, then I got to sit up, Ryan.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of work.
I tweeted the thing the other day. It was like top podcasting couples, and I had you guys in there.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, thank you for doing
that. I was just trying to put, I'm like, I was thinking about it. I was like, man, there are a lot of married couples that do podcasts, mm-hmm. and most of them are McElroys, but, you know, like, they're a podcasting empire upon a family, basically.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't know what McElroy is.
It started as three brothers, Justin, Griffin, and Travis. They're from West Virginia. And so the show is My Brother, and Me. And it's kind of, right now is a weird time because the Yahoo Answers service is shutting down. And they use that on their show because it's like an advice show, but it's kind of fake advice. And so they take dumb questions off of the Yahoo thing and try to seriously answer them. And then they make joke answers too. But then they answer like real fan questions too. So it's a fun show.
And that's interesting to think that you could...
Yeah.
Make a living.
They do. Yeah. Because they're all of them host separate podcasts with their wives, at least one.
Okay.
And some of them have two or three extra podcasts.
That's what I was going to say, so that some of them have two or three wives.
Extra. No. No.
Yeah. They all have kids and stuff, though. So it's got to be an okay job because you're at home most of the time. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I guess since we're talking about we don't have like an intro, but I kind of like how this has been rambly and weird. So like, I don't know if we want to like just throw like record a little bit right now for what could be an intro.
Second.
Just basically like what I was thinking is like, hey, this is episode 4, the lounge hour. Because we're actually I thought of this segment.
It
would be sitting around a six pack. Because we each get two beers or whatever, and so we just like chat it out. I thought it was like that would be an actual thing, like I would bring a six pack and then we would just split it and drink it and talk and stuff, and it's like that could be a segment. But that's basically what we're doing.
I was going to say you brought an actual six pack,
and we're fully stocked.
Yeah,
dude, seriously, the other day, I'm you know, getting ready in the morning, making coffee, and all of a sudden I see an animal out back right there on the patio, not the deck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that a dog? And I'm looking, honest to God, right, and it was a fox.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fox. Apparently, if you, like, get them early enough, they make decent pets. Same thing with squirrels, also. If you catch a squirrel, like, kind of early enough and train it, it'll just be like a little house cat. So I've been told.
Yeah, no, really, Ryan, just get it when it's early enough.
It's not somebody that just told me. Cat. It was a thing I heard on another podcast. It was probably Alicia Tobin, who is one of my favorite podcasters in the world.
That's interesting. I can't imagine being fond or close to a squirrel or a fox.
Some people de-stinkify skunks and have those as pets because they're cuddly and soft. They just happen to stink real bad.
And that's not their
fault. They're kind of cute if you look at them, like, and not be scared of them. They're just like big, fluffy cats, kind of.
I was going to say that's Pepe Le Pew.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The rapist Pepe Le Pew. Isn't that sad?
That's really sad that you can take a children's cartoon and...
I mean, it doesn't send the right message, that's for sure. I mean, like, the girl was... resilient, so I mean that's a good message, but the guy side of it's not great.
Yeah.
I realized the other day, I was thinking, I was walking around, the cultural paradigm for that has kind of shifted. We're like, now if you talk about somebody that did something cool and they're older, almost every time recently I've heard somebody like mention, like, you know, an old actor or something like that, it's like, man, I hope he's not a piece of crap. You have to like clarify your opinion of someone now. You can't say, oh, he's a good guy, as far as I know. Like, you have to, because then you could be like, oh, he supports. Like, that's, I don't like that. It's so bad.
Well, and that's why you don't.
Especially with art. Mm. I can love someone's art and hate their guts.
Yep.
What they made is not them. It's what they made.
Yeah.
But at the same time, some artists are gigantic dirtbags.
Well, I mean, we're humans.
Yeah.
So many of us are gigantic dirtbags.
I can be a dirtbag.
Yeah.
But, you know, depends who you ask.
Yeah. Especially with artists. I mean, you can't have a normal brain and make something that everyone else didn't think of. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to have the brain that can think of it. And you got to sacrifice another part, I think. Like, because you can't be everything. Except me, because I'm perfect.
Well, it's we're all kind of
thinking. You guys ever watch The Wire?
No.
Oh my, yeah. Okay. That's what I try not to judge people for not watching shows because I hate when people do that to me.
Well, I guess
that is
educate,
especially learn. For anybody that's a remote fan of journalism. Like, I mean, the last season is set in newspaper, but
who educate me?
It's an HBO show set in Baltimore. It's about the Baltimore Police Department and kind of the city itself. Like, you will, whenever you talk or hear about The Wire, it's constantly thing like the city is a character because they shot there. And so, like, you get the feeling of the city.
Who's in it?
Dominic West is probably the most famous person, even if you know who he is. He was in 300. He's the senator that Leonidas's wife stabbed, the creepy guy that raped her or whatever. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He's like a British play actor, mostly is what he was, but he's been in some stuff since then. But The Wire is definitely like his biggest thing.
And that's on HBO?
Yeah.
Do you have a subscription to HBO or
do I do not. I own the DVDs.
Okay.
But it's a cop show primarily, but it's weird because like in the first season, it's mostly focused on the Baltimore drug trade. And so you follow sort of a high-end drug unit that's trying to involve murders and drugs or whatever. And they're trying to, they show you the cops and then they show you the bad guys in gigantic air quotes. Because a lot of them are like elementary school kids standing out on the corner selling drugs and it's that sort of stuff. But then you see like the kingpin sort of guy, you see him and see his family and see all the stuff he does. And so you get to like, you empathize with both sides.
So kind of like Sopranos.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's HBO and it's David Simon is the writer, creator, and he was a Baltimore beat reporter for The Sun forever. And Ed Burns was a Baltimore homicide detective and he co-wrote it and helped create it.
Do you? I mean, could...
It's one of the best shows ever made, like hands down.
Wow.
Because it's a cop show and you never see a cop shoot someone. Never happens. Almost every cop show you ever see, like in the episode, guy's got gun out and he's firing or whatever. And like you see one cop pull a gun to start to shoot, but then you don't see it because that's not the point. Like the point's the job. Everywhere. It should be everywhere because it is just a great show.
Okay. We can remember that.
We'll remember that.
Yeah. It's so good.
We won't remember that.
But there's a funny quote from that I was going to say, but if you don't get the quote, then I won't say it because it is kind of graphic and gross, but it's funny.
Well, say it. We're friends.
Oh, it was one of the detectives, Bunk Moreland, and another guy were talking, and Bunk just goes, he goes, I don't know, man. I'm just a humble motherfucker with a big ass. And like, especially if you saw the show, like you're laughing, cause, but like him saying it, you're like, yep.
Perfect.
Yep. Perfect. Yeah. No, perfect. Oh, that's the, what's his name? Wendell Pierce, that's Bunk. He's been in a lot of stuff too. He was in the Amazon show Jack Ryan, the new one, if you've seen that, with what's his face from The Office. John Krasinski plays Jack Ryan.
It's like I recognize names,
we'll have to remember.
The first episode, you should probably get where it's going, but give it a couple because it didn't grab me right away.
Okay.
But what, like, once you start getting it, especially Bodie, there's a dealer in the show called Bodie, and he's just a kid, basically. And like watching him go through the series, you're just like, man, I hope he makes it okay because a lot of people don't make it through the show. And you're just like, come on, Bodie, come on. And like, you know, he goes through some crap, and it's like, you get near the end, it's like, yes, buddy, come on. And it has one of the main characters, but he came to be a central character, is Bubbles. He's a crack addict that, like, you see his schemes where he tries to get money to get drugs and stuff, and you get to the point where, like, he's trying to get clean, so you're like rooting for him to get clean, but then you're kind of like, watching High Bubbles was kind of fun.
Kind of fun, yeah. You're a little more fun when you don't have your shit together.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a good show.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, we were going to do an intro to this rambling mess that...
Well, see, because I had a set bar. Let's record and do what we do.
Okay. Yeah.
Or, I mean, for real.
Oh, yeah, because we're...
We're for real.
We're 22 minutes in already, so...
It's kind of like when you play marbles, are we funsies or keepsies? Or keepsies now. Let's get this done.
And I'm listening. I am hearing the music in my head.
There you go.
You ready?
I was born ready. My dad used to always say that. I'm like Jack Burton. I was born ready. From that movie with Kurt Russell. Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
I think that was.
Yep. I was born ready.
Yes. So,
come on, Jennifer. You really? Ready?
I'm ready.
Well, because you couldn't talk or move or walk or anything when you're born, so I don't think he was born ready.
Jack Burton, no. So.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, in three, three, two. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode of A Couple Takes on MS. It was our fourth episode, and we hope you come back to us next time where we will talk about a heavier topic, just talking about loss and multiple sclerosis. So we want to talk about that. But until then, thanks for listening. And if you want to hear more, reach out to our producer, Ryan, on what's your email address, Ryan?
The producer email is actomspodcast@gmail.com.
So you can reach out to Ryan there, and you can follow us on our website, acoupletakesonms.com, or on Twitter is @coupletakesonms. There is no A in it, so coupletakesonms. But thanks for listening to the podcast, and if you would, please subscribe or provide a comment.
Yeah, like and share and comment wherever you listen. Please tell other people you listen by giving us 5 stars and a nice description, please. Thank you.
So thank you. This has been A Couple Takes on MS. I'm Dan Digman.
And I'm Jennifer Digman.
I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. Take care.